And welcome back to the program. We're going to go right to our next guest who's been standing by. Darren Good wrote a really interesting article for Politico last week titled A Green Movement of All Stripes, and asking the question, can conservatives and environmentalists get along? As someone who's been saying green should be the new red, white, and blue for over a decade now in various situations, really intrigued to hear about what he has to say and what he found. Regular listeners of this program will know that we had Deborah Dooley on of the Green Tea Party Coalition a month or so ago, and I love these stories when we find out that religious leaders, veterans, or you know, joining forces with environmentalists, labor unions, to really see how crazy it is for us to be not joining together to fight the common threat of climate change and all the threats to our environment across the board, across the Green Front. That is the name of our show, the Green Front Line. So I want to welcome Darren to the program. Thank you.
How are you?
Great to have you. Love Politico. We get a lot of stories from your great writing, and really glad that you focus on climate change and energy issues and environmental issues quite a bit. And particularly notice this trend that we've been, since we see everything through green filters here on the Green Front, that some interesting, you know, former political foes are coming together in new ways, and that's probably one of the most hopeful signs we've seen in several years. So what brought you to this issue, to take a closer look or drill down, if you will?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is definitely some interesting pockets of activity happening on a local level, someone on a state level, and a little bit on a national level. I kind of got intrigued by this because you mentioned Debbie Dooley, that you had her on as a guest, and her partnership with the Georgia Sierra Club chapter to try to expand solar use down there, fighting a transportation sales tax, even fighting the proposed new site of the Atlanta Braves stadium. For different reasons, they came together toward common goals, and it's been pretty well chronicled that basic effort down there, but I started to think, you know, there has to be other things going on out there. And I remember also writing about this partnership between the Environmental Defense Fund and quite a few former George W. Bush environmental officials led by former Interior Secretary Gail Norton, who formed this what's called the Conservation Leadership Council. And what they're looking at are voluntary incentives, kind of marketplace-based ways to help endangered species, help public lands, expand clean energy financing. Frankly, not that much different from what these folks were touting when they were in office. But having someone like EDF involved, I think, adds a little bit more robustness to this to a certain extent. I know the Nature Conservancy is not officially part of it, but they've had officials that have attended roundtable talks. CLC has issued about a dozen position papers so far, and they may be kind of moving towards a more action-oriented agenda. Interestingly, Environmental Defense Funds, for the first time in the 2014 cycle, is going to give money, probably going to give money directly to Republicans that are up for safe Republican seats. So these are not swing districts, not swing races by any means. These are safe red seats Republicans are running for, and they're going to possibly give money to Republicans that they see as potential future partners. So as we know, Congress is oftentimes the last one to get on board with any kind of a trend, right? These things are in the local level or state level, out elsewhere, and it takes a while for that to infiltrate to Capitol Hill, but EDF is going to try to see whether they can do that. But for the moment, we've got like Debbie's effort down in Atlanta. You've got a similar effort involving promotion of solar power in Arizona, which involves Barry Goldwater Jr., the former congressman and son of the late conservative icon. You've got in Tennessee, you've got an effort between conservatives and environmentalists opposed to mountaintop mining. again, for very different reasons, but the goal was the same. Debbie has mentioned to me personally, she may have mentioned it on your program too, that she wants to expand that Green Tea Coalition more nationally. She told me that she had been she'd gotten requests from folks from California and from other states. These are folks on the left, on the right, college students who want to set up their own chapters on campuses and elsewhere, these own green tea chapters. And kind of like the Tea Party movement, the agendas are probably going to be very diverse. We'll see. We'll see whether this actually starts to get something going a little bit here. You know, it wasn't that long ago when these kind of partnerships were a little bit more common. They seem to have dissipated quite a bit in recent years. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago when, the Republicans and the Democrats were putting together key updates to the Clean Air Act in 1990. Richard Nixon, of course, signed the Clean Air Act into law. Even Ronald Reagan, who's not known for his environmental stewardship, really, signed the Montreal Protocol into law. It wasn't that long ago when these kind of things were happening, and so it'll be interesting to see whether this really grows into a real trend.
Hmm. And I see, Darren, that you graduated from the University of Georgia. I was actually born in mm-hmm. Georgia, but didn't live there very long. My dad was in the Army at Fort Benning a long time ago. But mm-hmm. I don't know Georgia politics, but it was very interesting talking to Deborah Dooley and one of her partners in this effort. And perhaps I mischaracterized in the opening to our segment, you know, that it's the common goal to fight climate change, because in fact it isn't. In fact, right. In many cases, and in this case, they're all for a free market, as conservatives are. And you mentioned another mm-hmm. example, the Tennessee Conservative Union, Lloyd Daugherty's group, and how mm-hmm. they are objecting to mountaintop mining because of its effect on property rights and hunting and fishing. Does it matter what the goals are, or the motivators are, if the outcome is positive for our environment, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, if you have people with completely different ideological agendas for the most part, then you're going to be a little bit limited. You know, the goals are probably going to be somewhat narrower, I guess. I mean, you know, these are not people that are going to go out there and advocate for mandatory policies or subsidies, for that matter. Like, Debbie Dooley doesn't like subsidies of any type. But she wants to even the playing field. That's why she wants to get more solar available to consumers. The mountaintop mining issue, you know, I don't see the Tennessee Conservative Union necessarily. I don't know whether or not they would back, as far as any kind of mandates are concerned. Then again, I will say about that group specifically, they kind of represent kind of more of an old school Reagan conservatism that isn't as opposed to necessarily mandates, rather, you know, as like in with the case with more modern Tea Party types. So there's a little bit of a generational difference there. But, as I was mentioning with a conservation leadership council, they're not advocating for mandatory policies either. They're advocating for more incentives and for trying to come up to a better state for species and lands and so forth, you know, without the kind of command and control policy that they've long objected to. I will say that, you know, there is skepticism, of course, by those that say that, well, we wouldn't want voluntary measures to trump any necessary laws, any necessary mandates. And so they wouldn't want that, you know, too much emphasis on, you know, only a piece of what they consider to be a much bigger puzzle that needs to be put together. But with that said, there's not much going on Capitol Hill right now at all. The administration is certainly doing what it's doing, and they're trying to put together an agenda that can survive a legal challenge. They shouldn't be too. I don't see much obstacle on Capitol Hill. Again, Congress can't seem to agree on anything, whether it is to produce a law or repeal anything. But they're still going to, you know, the administration is still going to have to survive legal scrutiny, and that remains a question mark. So, you know, if you have these other kind of efforts going on a local, state, and potentially on a national level also, try to put together some things in place that at least makes things better in the interim, We'll see whether or not that idea starts to catch fire again, even among those that are pushing for a much more aggressive or expansive agenda.
And I'm speaking with Darren Good. He is the senior energy and environment reporter for Political Pro. Political.com has all kinds of interesting stories about what's going on politically with our environment and our climate. And as you noted, Darren, there has been gridlock for way too long and continues to be a stalemate in Congress on any kind of legislation like this. Do you have any hope that a carbon tax could see the light of day?
I don't see that happening anytime soon. I know there's been some talk about could that possibly be part of a much broader tax reform package. There, of course, are efforts ongoing to try to do a big change, big overhaul of the tax code. I don't see that happening this Congress. I don't really see the broader overhaul happening this Congress. And I think proponents of a carbon tax or something similar to that, I think we'd certainly need more time than this Congress to get enough political momentum for that type of an idea. I mean, we'll see. I mean, even folks that are, I think it's safe to say that there are folks that, you know, have been pushing the idea, but I think they would also acknowledge that it would be very difficult to do that now. You almost really can't do anything that has the word tax on it. So I would say no, certainly not within divided government. I don't think so. But, you know, could Congress look a lot different 2-4 years from now? We'll see.
Okay, and we just have time for one more question. I know you write a lot about the Obama administration and their policies or what they're trying to propose in relation to energy solutions going forward and curbing emissions. Do you think it's been enough? I was encouraged last spring when they held a White House summit on climate change for women leaders. Was very pleased to be one of the 100 women invited there. And it was a day of, pretty high-level presentations from the newly installed Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz to Heather Zikal, however you pronounce her name, who
Zikal,
thank you, is leaving that position if she hasn't already. There hasn't been a whole lot in the way of follow-up. They mostly wanted to get us together, those of us who are working in various sectors, to, you know, educate the public and to really activate the masses. And they wanted us to meet each other so we could work together. But the disappointing part was they weren't offering to partner with us in any way. They said they couldn't. That really wasn't their role. So there was some initial excitement among those of us who are aware of this event and perhaps some disappointment in the wake of it. Hopefully they'll have a follow-up one this spring. But what's your view from where you stand on was that speech, you know, in the sweltering heat and humidity on June 25th of this year on climate change at Georgetown, you know, the beginning and end of President Obama's comments on climate change? It seems like, once again, healthcare is bumping climate and other issues. Every other issue is trumping climate from coming back in a significant way to the attention of the Obama administration.
Well, to be fair, I mean, that talked about an agenda that the administration is rolling out. I mean, they EPA proposed revised carbon limits for future power plants. The EPA is working on first time proposed rules for existing power plants, and that's really the big one right there.
Right.
And so the agency is working on that. There are some other efforts, you know, as part of that overall climate agenda. Those two EPA rules are really the heart and center piece of this agenda. So if the administration were to do that, were to finalize both of those, again, they would be looking to try to do so that it could survive a legal challenge, because these things are going to get sued upon without a doubt. All right. I mean, these are huge, huge regulations, landmark regulations. So I think the administration is, you know, certainly trying to match the words to, you know, try to match actions to rhetoric. I mean, you know, there was a lot of disappointment, I know, among those in the green community, including some very wealthy donors to the president who were bemoaning very much so leading up to the 2012 election, bemoaning the fact that more action hadn't been taken. And there were some that were threatening to withhold donations and support because the president was still not flip-flopping, but he hadn't made it a concrete decision yet on Keystone XL, which many have lumped into the climate change debate. There was an ozone rule, a big smog rule that had been put on the back burner. They didn't feel that enough had been done on climate change up to that point. He hadn't really talked about it very much after kind of that initial effort to do a cap and trade bill, which some criticized him for not pushing hard enough because he was pushing so hard on the healthcare law. So all that was kind of, you know, that leading up to the 2012 election, and then Hurricane Sandy happened, and then that kind of changed the dynamic somewhat. He started talking about the issue more, and that led up to his State of the Union address, inauguration speech, actually. He mentioned the issue. But he has built it up a bit more in recent months, and the EPA behind the scenes is doing this action. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, healthcare, obviously the healthcare law rollout, such a huge political issue, is going to be used again in the 2014 midterm. So we're going to see a lot more of that. But we'll see. I mean, you know, these EPA rules actually might be, you know, also kind of a political tool being used. But beyond that, it really doesn't matter as long as the administration, if they finalize these rules, you know, that would be a huge action on their part. And then it's all about whether the courts will give it a stamp of approval also.
Yeah, it's taken up so much political bandwidth and time and energy and, frankly, you know, a lot of ridiculous fighting back and forth, the healthcare reform effort, of course, and now it's not going away. It's just taking up more in the second term, you know, than anyone could have ever imagined. So that is unfortunate. Whatever your position is on healthcare reform, Obamacare, if you will, you know, Mother Nature just isn't going to sit around and wait for us to get our act together, you know, forever. So thank you for shedding some positive light on the interesting political bedfellows that some traditional red and blue groups, that means environmentalists on the progressive side and some conservative groups like hunters and fishermen and people who are for less government involvement, some of the alliances are forming, even if with different motivations, having a positive effect. So thanks so much, Darren Good, and keep up the great work at Politico. We'll be right back with one more segment you won't want to miss. Stay with us. You're listening to The Green Press.